Welcome to the latest series of the Women Who Sport podcast. This series is made possible by the support of Boob Armour, who make protective inserts that fit inside a sports bra and protect breast tissue while training or competing. The inserts are lightweight, comfortable and suitable for all sporting activity. Check them out at www.boobarmour.au or through the links on the Women Who Sport social media channels. We're incredibly lucky to be working with a company that are leading the way with the protective equipment offered to female athletes, giving everyone the confidence to participate in sport.
Today's episode is with Shauna Brown, former English rugby star and Commonwealth hammer thrower. In rugby union, she represented England and Harlequins women until her retirement in December 2022. SB made her debut for England in 2017 against Canada. She then went on to represent England in the World Cup final just gone. She is a remarkable athlete, has done some incredible things off the pitch and continues to do so.
Cool. Before we get SB on, let's start with our highs and lows of the week. Bonner, do you want to start with your high of the week?
High of the week. Oh, okay. High of the week, Women's Six Nations has started and there were some class games. In particular, the Italy-France game was sensational. Really, really good match. Closer than I thought it was going to be.
And Rigoni is a boss lady.
Literally. I love her. So
cool.
Oh,
she's cool as her.
Yeah, I know.
High of the week, similarly, I loved everything for Sarah Hunter's final match. She has 141 international caps and just loved all the build-up to the match. Loved to kind of see the emotion of everybody there. And she will have started playing for England 16 years ago at a time where there wasn't a whole bunch of people watching women's rugby. So for her to finish in Newcastle in front of 10,000 people, I think was everything that she deserved.
Oh, completely. It was amazing. And like, hats off. She's been an absolute servant to the game. Like, really, really nice way to send her off.
Yeah, I really thought that, like, it doesn't matter who you play for or what badge you wear on your chest, you can appreciate that Suns is an absolute legend.
Completely agree. I sort of put this as my low of the week. Obviously, it's an amazing thing. It's the end of her chapter. It's all completely on her terms. But it's sad to see her go because she's still performing really well, but actually that's probably the best way to go when you're still at the top of your game. And I guess she's got like coaching as her next chapter, but it was her and also Maddie Hinch retiring from hockey, because again she's been an absolute celeb within the hockey world, or just women's sport actually, and the things that she's done as a hockey player, as a goalkeeper. Again, really sad to see her go because she's still performing so well, but she sort of said, no, the tank is empty, I'm done. So more of like, it's like a positive low, but it's sad to see two big names hang up the boots, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. It's cool seeing them take it into their own hands, as you said, like they're still at the top of their game and going out on such a high. And as well, I thought it was so bad as of Suns to say that she's only playing the first match of the Six Nations. Like, that was like,
and also,
mic drop.
Like their last game's La Crunch as well, with possibly the highest numbers a rugby match has seen for the women's game in England. She's like, no, Newcastle, that's my home turf. I'm done. Yeah. Bow out.
No, I absolutely love that. My low of the week is one from playing recently in Vancouver Sevens. There was no sanitary bins in the women's toilets and it really upset me, mainly because I was on my period. So then you have to leave the cubicle with that little like ball in your hand.
Ball of like a tampon wrapped in tissue or something, like not ideal.
Yeah, no, just wound me up. Just think it's just such a simple thing that could be sorted, that just makes life on tournament so much more comfortable.
Yeah, because now not only are you planning, okay, I need to remember to take XYZ to the toilet, you're like, okay, I then also need to figure out how I get this out of the toilet after. In the competition, an international competition.
yeah, the secret mission to get in the toilets. You need to remember tampons. You're already worrying because you're wearing white shorts. And now, got to plan an escape route.
Exactly. Okay, that's a good low, really good low.
Yes, that wound me up. But anyway, let's get Sharon Martin on and get into it.
Okay, before we get started, we've got a few ease-in questions just to get to know SB a little better, you know? So, first one, if you could go back to any era, what would it be?
Oh, it'd be mid-90s. As I was growing up as a child, I had a fantastic childhood. I just played and played and played for hours a day, and I'd just be one of those latchkey kids. My mum would chuck me out at 8 o'clock in the morning during summer holidays and say, see you at 6 o'clock, here's a pound. And then just come back alive and not arrested, and that was all that matters. That was my bits for getting back in the house. Did you get in trouble with the police today? No. Are you all alive? Okay, and you come.
Class, that's so good. But you're right. Childhood was so good, and I say like now I would hate to be a kid that has like a smartphone. We had none of that. Like
everything's just constant. There's no time away from anyone, whether it's school, whether it's parents, friends, family, like you're constantly on. And at least as an adult, we can see the bad it's doing us sometimes and can choose to come away. But as a child, it's just like, you can't, because then you miss out what's going on. Then you go to school next and it's worse because you don't know something that's happened on Instagram and TikTok. It's like, oh, how do you not know? I'm not sure how I'd want to be growing up now.
Very good answer.
Okay, right. Next one. Last one. You got your big day coming up. Who would you trust at your wedding with the aux cable?
It'd be a bit, I'd go Sadia Kabea.
Nice.
Wild card, because she's not even invited and I'm not sure she could get there, would be Langi Tuima.
Yes! Oh my gosh, Langi, yes! She'd be class! Nice, I love it.
Perfect. Right. So on to a bit about your rugby background. So first represented England in 2017. Started playing not too long before that, I believe.
I think it was the next year I was starting. So I came on as a back row and then my first run out as a prop was starting prop.
And I guess you've just retired from England at the beginning of this year. So for you, what is the differences that you've seen in women's rugby since getting that first cap to getting your last cap at the Rugby World Cup?
The big one would be professional contracts for us in England. Came in 2019. And so before that, myself and so many others had full-time jobs, and we just made it work, as so many people would understand. And people who don't understand go, why'd you do it? Like, you sacrifice sleep, food, friends, family, time, and you're not getting paid, or you're getting paid very little, if at all. Might get a bit of petrol money. And it's just like, it's just what you want to do. It's your passion. It's what you love. And why not? Like, what else is there to do? So, yeah, main difference is contracts and being able to be full time, having the extra time. And actually, we didn't really train much more. It was just not having to rush everything into 2 or 3 hours for the day. Like, we can spread it across 5, 6, 7 hours a day. Yeah. The Premiership itself. So when I first started, it was just called the Premiership. And then it transferred into the Tyrrells Premier 15s and as now Allianz Premier 15s. And just the level of that and the fact that there was standards for a team to get in, and people are torn on whether it's a good thing to not have promotion and demotion, but to have a criteria that you have to meet essentially for player welfare, for the best standards. But I think personally it's better for the whole game, because, you know, having to have a physio is a good thing. Having to have a certain amount of coaches and provisions, and especially like the medical side of things. And that's the side so many people forget, and especially community rugby. And I'm not sure I would play community rugby, because if I got hurt, I don't know where I'd stand. And at least in the Premiership, you would be looked after, hopefully to an extent, depending on your contract, which again can be a bit fishy, depends on what you've signed. But it's the level of professionalism, it's the amount of eyes that are viewing, it now. It's the professional contracts, not only in England, but now across all of the home nations to an extent. And it's just so much more of a professional standard. We're just not there yet with the club contracts and everyone playing club rugby being professional. It's going in the right direction, too slowly, in my opinion, but it is something to celebrate, and it is moving at a decent rate. Just it could always go quicker, but I'm an elite athlete, and if you give me something, I'll always ask for more.
Yeah, no, I think that's what's like really admirable about you being like fortunate that you were my teammate. Like, it was noticeable that you would always push for us. You'd always have everyone's back, but you'd always be striving for more. And actually, well, no, that's not good enough. Or if I remember speaking to you about something like trying to do an appearance or something, you bet, mate, you need to make sure you get looked after. Like, if that was a bloke, say, it'd be on a grand, if not more, to do that. And like, you've always got everyone's backs and are like wanting to push more for us.
Yeah, it's finding that middle ground between being polite and appreciating the progress and how far we've come and the facility or whatever it is, but then still letting people know it's okay, but we've still got an ocean to go until we're either at parity with the men or at least just have something that a similar structure and lifestyle to male professional across so many sports. But yeah, it's just finding that balance between saying thank you and I'm happy that we are here, but okay, what's next? And that is almost the disease of being an elite athlete. And the reason why, as a rugby player, you could win a World Cup, you could win World Player of the Year, and you still stay in the game. You'd be in athletics and you'd get a world record. You'd get one, two, maybe three Olympic golds, and yet you still stay in because you just always want more. Like, that's in our nature as elite athletes.
Yeah, no, that's true. So that actually kind of leads us on to next question. Rugby World Cup final, your last cap. Have you processed it? Are you ready to talk about it? Like, what are you feeling about it now?
Yeah, all processed, and it was tough. But my initial thoughts as soon as that whistle went in my head, and in fact, not just in my head, I said it out loud, as like, get me home now, like teleport me home right now. I do not want to be here. It's all been a waste. What was it all for? I've literally busted my guts for years, let alone the months in the summer. And I just went in my head and went back to the summer sessions. People are throwing up and it's 30 degrees and we're all running around and we're moaning that we've not got enough cold towels and we're all in it together. We're dying together. And I just thought it was all for nothing. And so I just felt empty. Like, I didn't cry. I just stood there. I don't even think I hugged anyone. I just stood there just like, what? There's nothing left. I'm just empty. But then, even as soon as, well, going into the changing rooms, it was me and Poppy Cleo just got into the hot tub, and it was like tops off in the hot tub, just chill out. And anyone who sort of popped their head and said, come in, but you've got to take your top off, it's tops off hot tub. And it was just turning it into, as we do as rugby players, like, you just turn it into have a joke, have a drink, and just have a chat about it. And we ended up having a few giggles in there. And then when it was all team on the bus out, we pretty much sung all the way home, which was, again, was real and just nice and sort of that close to the heart. And we sing every time we play. So it's us almost staying true to ourselves. And just because we lost, it doesn't change who we are. And the difference of 4 points, it would have been like the greatest win in history, having 14 players for 65 minutes. But it wasn't to be, so it didn't happen. And then coming home, I was still thinking, oh yeah, it was all right, but it's still a bit of a waste. But actually, put it in perspective, we're world silver medalists. If we went to any individual sport, went to a world championships and come home with a silver medal, we'd still be celebrated. How many Olympians you go on a bus tour, any sort of medalist. And it's still a pretty cool achievement. I mean, it's not what we went for, but it's what we came back with. And the amount of like love and interest we had back home, it still surprised me. I still have people, like, so I was at the England-France men's game on Saturday, and people were telling me like how they woke up for the games and that final was like one of the best games of rugby I've ever seen. I was like, you woke up for it? You're crazy. It's like, well, we had to, because England were in a World Cup final, and that's not happened since 2019, blah, blah, blah. I was like, wow. So yeah, the support back home was incredible. And I don't think we fully got to appreciate it while we were there, because we were literally in a whole different world and a different time zone. But yeah, since coming home and realizing and talking to people that I just know on a daily basis anyway, But yeah, you girls have you guys smashed it, and we're all so incredibly proud of you.
And I think even seeing the 15,000 at Harlequins, big game, and they're talking about over 30,000 tickets have already been sold for France England at Twickenham. Yeah, it highlights, like, even without that gold medal, you inspire a nation. Like, the crowds that we've seen in the Premiership this year have been insane, and that's off the back of the Rugby World Cup.
There's been quite a few appearances around men's games, international men's games, and it used to be, because you just walk around the tables and pretty much just be a player in the room and just talk to people, like, help them to enjoy their day and their hospitality experience. And it used to be, I'd have to sort of introduce myself, and it'd be a bit weird because you'd go to one of the men's players and he might introduce you, if you're lucky, if he even knew who you were. But then went to the England-New Zealand men's game straight after the World Cup, and I was walking around with George Cruz, and so many people go, "Oh, Shauna, hi, come speak to me." And they'd be like, "And who's that bloke you're with?" I was like, "Oh, that's a bit awkward. It's George Cruz, but no worries." I was like,
yes! That's class.
So true. But, like, equally, I think for, like, you guys, we spoke about this in a previous pod, like, the Red Roses have not only done a lot for grassroots and like the English fans, but for other nations. Like, you're massive trailblazers and certainly, like, pushing the boundaries that are forcing other nations to catch up. So from that point of view, like, we are also like, yeah, keep going.
A lot of that is to do with the organisation of England Rugby and DRFU. As much as, again, there's still so many things to do and progress to make, I certainly feel, and I'm not one to ever toe a company line because that's what's said, but I do feel as if we are supported as women within England Rugby. And yeah, like you say, it's just going to keep pushing other nations to do the same. And as honest as I talk about when I'm say how good it is to have contracts for women, I'll always say, yeah, but there's still other home nations who need the support. And there might be a headline of everyone's got professional contracts now. And I go, yeah, but is it an amount that you can live on? Is it even at least 15 contracts? Because, hello, we play a game of 15s. Some people offering less than 15 contracts. So, yeah, just grateful to be English sometimes in rugby. But that's it.
And in terms of that decision to retire after the World Cup final, was that a tough decision to make, or was it one that, like, had you seen it coming, I guess?
I seen it coming, yes, because I only ever took rugby seriously because I wanted to play in a World Cup. And so as soon as I was selected for the World Cup, it was like, right, this might be. Oh, and it was always like, see how I feel. I didn't make the final decision until, I think, coming back from the World Cup, to be honest. But it was always, I wanted to go to a World Cup. I was selected for a World Cup, but this might be the beginning of the end for me. But it allowed me to fully enjoy my time at the World Cup. And there was a conversation at the beginning of the tournament where I was told I'm probably not going to play, and you probably can't train your way into the squad, but you're here. We win together or we all lose together. It's like, you're very much part of the team, but unless someone gets hurt or red carded or there's some sort of issue, you're probably not going to play. And I was like, ooh. I just felt so much weight had lifted off my shoulders, and different players took that conversation very differently. But I was like, I can actually enjoy my time. I can actually enjoy training and enjoy just being around the environment because there's no pressure. As you girls both know, it's just like you're at a high pressure training environment and you're always questioning yourself, like, oh, should I have done that? Should I have made that offload? Should I have carried? Oh no, I missed that tackle. I dropped that ball. Like, I'm probably going to be dropped from the team sheet this week. If only I just made the extra meter. And that was constantly going through my mind during training session. But then hearing that, it was just like, oh, well, I'm not going to play anyway. So I might as well have the best time. And so, yeah, I very much had a good time at the World Cup. And it didn't help my decision because I thought, oh, I'm actually having a good time now. Maybe I do want to stay in playing. But then it's just other life decisions in terms of, like, say I'm getting married this year, hoping to start a family at some point in the next, you know, in the near future. I'm 32. So many people say, oh, well, have a baby and come back. And I'm just like, I don't want to. Because I'm not pregnant right now. It's going to take a while. And then you have a baby and that's a year. And then you've got another few months or whatever. And I'm just like, oh, I just don't want to. So I'd rather start a family essentially than go into another World Cup, because again, people would say, it's only 2.5 years to the next World Cup. I think, yeah, it's only 2.5 years compared to four, but 2.5 years is a long time. And if I didn't want to be somewhere, I'm not very good at being places I don't want to be. I'm not very good at talking to people I don't want to talk to. I'm not very good at toeing the party line. I just really like enjoying life and just living life to the fullest. And my heart wasn't in it anymore. It came back to Quinn's and it was confirmed that it's not fair to me, but it's also not fair to my teammates. It's not fair to the coaches. If I'm not in it 100% all of the time, then I need to step away. And so, yeah, it was so many sort of little bits of decisions coming together. And it's just a circle of life, right? People come, people go. I'm just not one to hang around forever until the wheels fall off. I'd rather get a new car than let the old car's wheels fall off.
What good way of putting it. So, like, on that career transition, how important is it for you to have that sort of plan B or your next step in place? Or is this something you've just gone, like, I'm not happy, I'm going to change that and then think about the next thing when it comes?
Yeah, so I've always had other things going on. I always worked, I always had full-time jobs. And again, I changed jobs as often as I changed sport. And I was a British gas engineer, a commercial diver, and then finished on being a firefighter. So I always had other skills. I've always had a CV as well. I've been to job interviews. I've applied for a job. And I just thought that was life, because surely everyone has a CV. Surely everyone knows how to apply for a job. Surely everyone knows how to conduct themselves in a job interview. But actually, when you speak to people, men and women, men in particular, if they've played rugby all of their lives and been a professional contract all their lives, they're like, no, don't have a CV, wouldn't know where to look for a job, wouldn't know how to apply for a job. And I'm like, whoa, like that's sad, actually. And somebody needs to help you with that. But I've always had other things going on. And so the prospect of not playing, for me, it actually just meant I'm more likely to have more time for the other things that I was already doing. So whether it is just my work in, like, say, diversity and inclusion, or whether it's talking about just being more honest and having interviews with journalists, and they come away like, you're really quite honest, aren't you? And I go, yeah. Because that is what, I'm never lying, even if it's not great news, you just find a sort of diplomatic way to put it across. But also, like, I'm on the board of Youth Sport Trust, I'm on the board of England Rugby Students, well, Students RFU, and I work with Girls Rugby Club. Like, it's just having a lot more time and having the opportunity to go to the Cayman Islands and coach. Now I've got so much more time for the other things in life, and I love playing rugby. And do I miss it? Not yet, but I'm sure it will come. And I'm sure when I watch the first game of the Six Nations, I'll be like, oh, well, I could have been there. But yeah, like, at this moment in time, I'm very content with my decision, because I'm so busy. Like, I've got so much going on. And I also got to a point where I took more enjoyment from empowering others to play. And it was just like, and then sort of when that, but I always enjoyed empowering others to play, and especially empowering women to know that they can do more and very much stay involved in rugby. But everyone says, oh, like, what's next? Definitely. And what's next after Cayman Islands when you come back? And I just said, well, I'm not too sure. I've just got things going on and I just hope for the best. And that is not career advice. I would not recommend anyone does that and aims to not have much definitely confirmed when they come back. However, it is how I live my life, and I'm really quite happy at the moment.
Yes, Fee, that's good. But, like, you deserve it though. Like, you've worked so hard.
Yeah. I'm so intrigued with the Cayman Islands, and also when you did the teaser on Instagram, I was honestly on the edge of my seat to find honestly, out where you did it up.
She'd be messaging me, being like, "Surely you must know what SB's doing." And I'm like, "Pal, I have no clue."
SB's screwed. So, yeah, basically, how did you end up in the Cayman Islands? That is so random. And just tell us all about that, because I imagine that is a, like, crazy life experience.
Yeah, I got a message from Mercedes Foy, Facebook Messenger, like, classic DMs, slid into my DMs. So many people do. And I just go, yeah, why not? Because that was what happened with No Woman, No Try as well. Victoria Rush slid into my DMs. Do you want to get involved? And I just go, yeah, what's the worst that could happen? And so, yeah, Mercedes Foy messaged me and just says, there's this opportunity here. We think you'd be good for it. Like, we'd quite like you to apply for it and potentially come over. And when it first came in, I thought, yeah, all right. Because I knew of her, and I think I'd sent her a video before for a rugby girls over in Cayman Islands, but I didn't know her. So I didn't think much of it. And then it's just like, but she sowed a seed. And I thought, oh. So then I started like looking up Cayman Islands and sort of lifestyle there and where it is and what's going on. And I was like, interesting. And then I'm getting the emotions around them being at a World Cup, selected for a World Cup, like being involved in the World Cup and whether I'm going to finish or not. And like, I didn't have an after rugby plan yet. And I was just like, So I sat on it for a while and then I thought, you know what? I'm just gonna do it. And to be honest, I didn't really know what role it was in its entirety. I just knew it was doing rugby of some sort, not playing, but doing rugby in the Cayman Islands. I was like, yeah. And it was only probably like a couple of weeks before I left, we actually had a phone call of what the job role is. And it wasn't what I expected it. I thought it was to be like head coach of the senior women's team. And it's not that at all, which I am so grateful for, because I would not make a good head coach at all whatsoever, because I'm no good at planning and I'm no good at like writing things down. I have to just, But anyway, it was more like a development officer. So I spend a lot of time going to schools. I coach Monday to Saturday. It's a lot of run forwards, pass backwards. No, forwards, other way, run the other way. Okay, score, that's right. That means you use two hands, put the ball down on the line and bring it back up in a controlled manner. So it's a lot of it is very basic, but then we have a club session because those are PE lessons where the rugby club are going in or they're coming to the rugby club for the PE lessons. And girls and boys are equally getting to do rugby. So a lot of them, it's the first time that they've ever seen a rugby ball, touched a rugby ball, don't even know what the sport is called. A lot of them were just like, slam the ball down over the line. Like, this is not American football. So sorry to disappoint you. But then, yeah, the other side of it is the actual club days and Saturday, well, like Tuesday, Thursdays, and Saturdays, where I'm more almost just sort of guide and the coaches as such. And I'm certainly not there to be anyone's head coach, but I'm there for advice and I'm there to look on my experience and what's worked in the past and my experience even with working with young people and getting to translate. So I had to learn a lot about myself and in terms of working with people who know nothing about rugby, which shouldn't really have been foreign to me because that was me not so long ago. I didn't grow up with rugby. But even when I would say, oh, turnover or go getting over that ball or hit it for a ruck, I'm like, hit it. And they're just standing there. Or another one that got me was like, come off me. I was playing touch and I just was playing as well. I was like, off me. And they're just sort of standing in front of me and they're like moving away from me. It's like, what? I said, off me. And I'm getting like real achy inside. And afterwards, I was like, right, why? What? Why was you not doing what I was asking you to? It's just like, and I clocked. I was like, oh, they have no idea what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Oh, damn. Like, dang it. I'm going to have to break it right down. And it's not about me and my knowledge and my level. It's about them. And I, as much as eventually we want them to come up to my knowledge level, the beginning stages, you have to learn to coach them. They don't have to learn to be coached by you. You have to learn to coach them and what they need. And it's been a good learning journey for myself as a person, for myself as a coach, and just realizing, although I knew anyway, that coaching's hard. I would always rather be the player than the coach, because as players, we turn up, we have a chat, put a GPS in, train, go eat some food or go sit down or go gym or whatever, but it's done. As a coach, you've got to plan the session. You've got to get there early. You've got to lay out the session. You've got to make sure that all the equipment's there. You then got to do the session. And then afterwards you review it and it's just so much longer. And I'm like, there's a lot involved in coaching. I'm not sure I'd want to do this actual properly with an actual team and be a head coach. And it was just a big learning curve. And now I'm like, oh, coaches actually work quite hard. And as much as we'd have a moan when we turn up, well, that session was rubbish and what are they doing? Why is it so slow? Hurry up and talk. But actually it's hard. Coaching is hard on your brain.
Maybe every athlete should be a coach for a little bit just so they understand the other side.
Oh, 100%. And you learn, like I say, you learn about yourself, but you also learn how to be a better player, I think. If you have to break something down to the most basic of detail, and especially like the women's group will always ask why, and they want very prescriptive, this is where you stand. So we had a line-out drill and it was, we want to do move and fast lift. So there's a red cone on, along the line, a red cone, a green cone, and a blue cone.
Yeah.
I said, just call a colour, you run to that cone and you lift on that cone. And I said, but first of all, can we establish what colour that is? Because it was sort of like a greenish yellow, because I know them already. And if I say yellow and they're, in their opinion, it's green, they won't go there because it's like, well, that's yellow. Like they're looking around for the green cone. So that was the first bit. And then they went, well, who goes on the cone? Is it the front lifter? Is it the jumper? Is it the back lifter? I'm like, just go and lift by the cone. Yeah, but what part of the cone? Like, is it the back of the cone? Is it the front? You just go and lift. So yeah, it's just learning that some people have so much more questions, and you have to learn people. And to be a good coach, you, in my opinion, you have to be a very good people person. No matter how much you know about rugby, if you can't get those messages across in a way that they understand and develop, then it's pointless, almost pointless.
Culturally, with the off-pitch stuff, have you found it to be really different?
I've honestly having a great time right now. I feel like I've just found a home in this world. So there's so many times, and I've spoke about it out loud before, there's so many times when I'm in this country, I just almost feel foreign to it, and I'm like, this isn't my kind of setting, and I'm not sure these are my kind of people, but I have to be around them for work or for sport or whatever it is, just throughout life. And yeah, going there, it's just, I feel like I've found my people, and I've adopted a new family out there. I've got a mum, a dad, a nan, a granddad. I've got some kids. I've got some big kids. I've got some nieces and nephews. And yeah, and even so, I'm going back on Friday or Sunday. I've not quite decided yet because I've got that flexibility now, which is great. And I keep saying, oh yeah, so I'm going home on the weekend. I'm like, I'm actually home now. Like going there is not going home. And I keep saying it. I said, I'm gonna go home on Friday. I mean, back to Cayman Islands. So like, yeah, I feel like it's home. And it's particularly the under 18 girls group is such a mixture of people. It's big, it's small, it's the doers, it's the talkers, it's black girls, it's white girls, it's mixed race girls, it's everyone in between. It's people with natural hair. Some people have got their weave on, some people will train with a do-rag on, some people will have their plaits, and like, there's just so many different types of people, and I love it. Even just the pictures that I have of them and their group, it's fantastic, a fantastic rainbow of people, and even accents, and working out where people are from, and then they sound like they've got an American accent, but they've been here all their life. And I'm like, wow, how did that happen? So yeah, we have a lot of non-rugby conversations, but I'm just intrigued about where they've come from, why they're here, their parents, what their parents do, etc. But yeah, there's lots of different types of people, and for me that is rugby. So yeah, loving it.
Oh, that is awesome. It kind of leads nicely onto the work that you do for creating more of an inclusive space, and like, you've done a lot for like your community. You're a voice of the Black community. Like, what is next for that? Have you got anything in line? Why is that so close to your heart?
So genuinely in life, I don't have a plan. And I'm still there at the moment. I recently just become a Mary Seacole Trust ambassador. And without going into too much detail, I would describe her as a mixed race version of Florence Nightingale. So like, that's her space. There's a lot of differences, and there's a lot of difference to story, but essentially, big picture, it's mixed race equivalent to Florence Nightingale.
Amazing.
And so that is a charity who wants to get more people of colour into positions of power, get more people of colour into sport, like get more people of colour into leadership roles, into businesses, and all of the stuff that holds true for me. And it's not, in fact, it's not a huge sporting charity. And that's the kind of space I want to be next, because although I say rugby and I'm talking about sport, so much of it, as you girls will know, is so transferable into the workplace and so transferable for life skills, and learning the discipline and the respect, and learning how to talk to people and learning people and how to work with others, and maybe work with people that you don't want to work with, but you have to, because that's your work environment. So yeah, just getting into other spaces where I haven't before, i.e. not sporting, and into the business world, but still bringing my sporting story to them and letting them know that it, like, sport can be for them if they want, but it doesn't have to be. Even if you don't want to go to the highest level of sport, just being around almost strong, independent women, it's just so, it's so powerful to have more people around you. I'm actually a Wooden Spoon ambassador now as well. So all these ambassador roles are coming up since I've stopped playing, and I'm going to a food bank on behalf of Wooden Spoon to hand over some money. And it's an area, well, it's in Lewisham, which is not far from where I grew up. And well, I went to school in Lewisham, grew up in the next little place along. But it's just like, that's, it's good for the soul. You know, sometimes you just do things that are good for the soul. You obviously, it's charity stuff, you don't get paid for it, but you've just got to do it to make you happy and keep yourself relevant as well, if you want to look at it from a almost selfish perspective.
Yeah.
But it's just so, like, it's not for nothing. Because I love talking to people who are not involved in rugby, because they're always so fascinated. And again, we get caught in a bubble of elite sport and elite rugby players, where we talk in a different language, and we do talk about rucks and mauls and scrums, and it's then other people being fascinated with our world, because we just get so used to this being caught up on the smallest things.
Yeah.
And yet I'll go to the event tomorrow and it'll be, yeah, you got to the World Cup and you played in the final, that's amazing. Like, they'll be over the moon that I'll be the best person that they've met all week or all month or maybe even their year. But then when we speak to each other as rugby players, it's like, yeah, missed out there, that was a bit rubbish. But it's just that bringing me back to earth, actually, and just keeping me to my roots, because I don't know, I wouldn't be surprised if we was that far away from needing a food bank when I was growing up, because it was just mum and three kids, and I would suggest she's done all right out of it. But it would have been the people that will be there at the food bank, for example, are the people that I would have grown up with. It's just keeping myself busy, keep myself relevant, but helping where I can. And there's not actually an end goal. It's just opportunities come up, I say yes or I say no. If it's good, I say yes. If I don't want to do it, I say no.
Love that. I'm here for it.
Another opportunity that you got involved in that you touched upon earlier was No Women No Try. And so could you tell us a bit about that project and what that was for the rugby community? Because I think it was kind of like the first big documentary in women's rugby that we'd seen.
I agree. I'm sure it was the first. And since then, there's been a few others, particularly in rugby. But it was initiated by Victoria Rusher, and she literally slid into my DMs. She's like, so I'm thinking about doing a film. Do you want to get involved? And I was just like, I mean, I've seen you before. I've heard your name. It can't be that weird. What's the worst that could happen? And it was just like, I'll be interested. And at that stage, it was literally just, are you interested? There was certainly no, this is going to go on Amazon Prime. I'm not even sure that she was definite she could make it happen, but it was just her at the beginning saying, I've got an idea. Would like you to be involved. Do you want to be involved? And I was just like, why not? And that then turned into a few days of filming throughout the year. And Bonnie, you would have seen the cameras at training a few times, and everyone just goes, oh, cameras are here. Sure not, cameras are here. And they always assume cameras are for me. Which
well,
is
come
funny,
on, which is normally are, true.
and it didn't take a lot of labor as such for me. I just had to be there, train. There was just a few separate sessions in terms of interview style, and they came to my house for one of the filming stages. And apart from that, I was just sort of me on camera, which I can do very well, very happy to do. And then it was, she put it together, and Victoria made it, put it all together as a film. And then, like, she was honest with me the whole time. She's just like, I don't know where this is going to go. Like, we put it together, this is the final edit. She would have funded it herself with the hope of someone buying it, potentially. And then, I got a phone call from her saying, mate, you'll never guess what. I was like, what? You'll never guess who wants to buy the film. I was like, hit me. She said, Amazon Prime. I was like, oh, sick. And it was a long old, like, illegal procedure you have to go through and sign loads of documents and blah, 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 blah. But yeah, it then came out last year, March, and it's still been a success now. I've been part of showings, even in the Cayman Islands. And it was just, yeah, had such an impact. I had so many messages on social media from so many people, essentially saying, thank you for making it. Thank you for being so honest. Like, I've never seen such a relatable documentary or film before. Ones that got me in particular was the ones that came from men and men who were involved in women's sport and said, thank you, because you've opened up a conversation. There are so many issues that we covered in that I didn't realize. Or some of them, like, I'm a head coach of a women's team and I don't even think about that stuff. I don't think about the kit. I don't think about the toilet situation. I don't think about sanitary situation. And like, well, you're welcome. And that's what it was about. It's about starting conversations. It's about being more open and honest and just hoping that people talk to each other a bit more. And I think as women, we're often guilty of just wanting to just get on with it, which is a good thing to an extent. But also we can get on with it, but we can do like men did. They get on with it, but then they tell everyone that we're going on. And then they'll tell everyone of this struggle. And then they'll tell everyone how hard they worked for this outcome. And it's not simple. I hope people get from it just having that conversation, being more honest. And if things aren't right, you can say, like, find a diplomatic way to say, but you can say, if someone says, how are you? Or how is the team doing? What can we do better as a club? Be honest and tell them.
Yeah. No, I think that's like a really good piece of advice for anyone like listening, whether it's rugby, any sport, just to have those honest conversations. Because if you're not, nothing's going to change. No one knows about it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. Okay. This is a good one. I think I feel like I'm excited for your response. So you basically have to finish this sentence. So success means.
Oh, now, wait, can we do that again? Good.
Okay.
Sorry, I wasn't ready. I was a run through. Go on.
Okay, so you need to finish the sentence. Success means.
Being truly happy with yourself and your decisions and being content in life.
Oh, I love that. I like really resonate with that as well. Because I think you can have 100 goals, or you can have one goal of being in a World Cup final. And actually, if you hate the process, is that really success? Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, appreciate that. Okay, now we go to this and that to wrap it all up. Rolo, you go for it first.
Okay, so 5 questions. You've got 2 options. What comes to mind? So tea or coffee?
Tea.
Android or iPhone?
Android at the moment.
Weight session or conditioning session?
Weight session.
Night in or night out?
Oh, night in. Always a night in.
Final question, Libra or Aquarius?
Libra. And for no reason whatsoever. Oh, is that you, Rona? Are you Libra?
I think I just won over SB squared.
I like the scales. I just like the pictures, because I think like the scales of life, it's just, for me, it's just about weighing up life and this and that. Aquarius is water, isn't it? And I'm Pisces, so like, it's my birthday on Wednesday, but I just,
oh my like god, that's it. Baby girl. Exciting.
No, amazing. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast and for sharing all that with us. It was so inspiring, everything that you've done. And it's, yeah, incredible what you're doing up now in the Cayman Islands. So I hope that you enjoy, yeah, the next couple of months of doing that. Anything you believe you can be.